Boyd Matheson divides rage from reason on Inside Sources.
We're going to take a look now at the very complicated dynamics between the U.S., the U.N., Israel, everything that's happening there in the Middle East. And things got even more complicated over the last 24 hours as the United States and the Biden administration has continued to push Israel and Hamas to agree to a 6 to 8 week ceasefire that would allow, obviously, more aid to go in to the innocent Palestinian civilians there inside of Gaza. And the big component to make all of that ceasefire work, of course, is the release of hostages. And over the last 24 hours, Hamas has been negotiating, again, with Israel and others in the region. The talks have been ongoing in Cairo, Egypt, with Qatar really serving as the main mediator with Hamas's leadership, who are mostly hunkered down in the Gaza Strip somewhere. And so as you look at that deal that everyone seems to be in favor of, from the UN to the U.S., other allies around the world, everyone, I think, wants to get to that ceasefire. But, of course, a critical component to that is those that have been taken hostage and been held for over 187 days. There's nothing about that works. Hostages are hostages. They shouldn't be there. But over the last 24 hours, Hamas has told negotiators that it can't do the deal because it doesn't have 40 Israeli hostages that it can release as part of a temporary ceasefire deal with Israel. So that admission raises all kinds of questions about the remaining hostages. At this point, the number is 133 hostages out of the 240 that were abducted on October 7th, and the addition of about 1,200 that were killed on the Israeli side of the border, 133 hostages are unaccounted for. And so if Hamas is saying we only have 40, and then this is also a group, they said there are some that are Israeli soldiers, both male and female Israeli soldiers, that they're unwilling to give up at this point. But the question then is, what else has gone on? Who is still alive? Who has the others? And so there's a whole host of questions. So I think the talks just got immensely more complicated because that will be a line, I think, for the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, to say, wait a minute, if the hostages are not alive, we should know that. If they're being held by someone else other than Hamas, that needs to be known. Or if you're just unwilling to say who you have and who you don't have, it's tough to negotiate. And while everyone agrees that getting more aid in is important and steps have been taken since last weekend, since President Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu had their last direct conversation, there has been additional aid going in, not enough by anybody's standard, I don't believe. But it does get it more complicated and more uncertain and less clear in terms of what the path forward is. And part of this is a lot of confusion, even inside of Israel, because of the mixed messages coming out of the United States. Late last week, as we covered here on the show, you had on one day, you had very stern, very blistering remarks from President Biden towards Benjamin Netanyahu in terms of what needed to be done following the killing of innocent aid workers who were delivering food and supplies to citizens there inside of Gaza. And the same day, the announcement of the additional sale of F-16 fighter jets, weaponry, and arms as part of that deal. And so that sends a whole host of mixed messages. Meanwhile, inside of Israel, it's also very complicated and complex. Benjamin Netanyahu is clearly not popular at the moment inside of Israel, even amongst his own people. And a lot of his own allies are starting to splinter as they see that it's going to be very difficult for the prime minister to hold on to power inside of Israel for very long. And many have accused Benjamin Netanyahu of simply dragging things out because it preserves his power. His chief rival, Benny Gantz, who's also part of the war cabinet, is now calling for early elections this September. And according to everyone we've talked to, Gantz would easily lead Netanyahu and take over the prime ministership. So that's an interesting dynamic, even inside of what's going on in Israel. We've been critical of Benjamin Netanyahu over the course of the last summer with a lot of the things that he was doing to centralize power, strip some of the power away from their Supreme Court, move it into the executive branch. And so there's a lot of challenges and things going on for Benjamin Netanyahu inside of Israel. So that creates additional uncertainty. And so then the question becomes, so what is the United States' role? And part of these mixed messages that the Biden administration has been sending have also come under some speculation and some criticism from people inside the administration and outside the administration, people that are traditionally President Biden's allies and those that he's usually at odds with, that there doesn't seem to be a clear, cohesive strategy or message as it relates to Israel and the relationship with Benjamin Netanyahu. And obviously, Israel has been a staunch ally and partner of the United States in the region for a long time. Those things, I suspect, will continue, but things are getting more complicated. And then, of course, you have things going on at the United Nations. The United Nations, of course, passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire. And the only reason that passed was because the United States abstained from voting. Because remember, as a permanent member of the Security Council, the United States has veto power. There's been a number of resolutions about ceasefire, including those put forward by the United States that were vetoed or voted against by China and by Russia. And so a lot of this has kind of gone around and around. And so then the question becomes, now that the United Nations has passed a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire, what is the United States' role? And all of this goes to a lot of the confusion and a lot of the uncertainty, I think, in terms of the UN of late. The UN resolutions that are written without enforcement measures can't force Israel to stop what its leaderships insist is a justified war necessary to remove Hamas and prevent another October 7th massacre. But it's also critical that what the entity can make Israel stop. And it isn't. And that's what the United States is and isn't doing as it relates to that UN resolution. And so all of this leads us back to the question of where do we go from here? Because to me, that's the real question in terms of leadership. Because if we can't get to a clarity in terms of direction, and this is where it's leadership and influence for the United States, clearly the United States cannot dictate to Israel what it can and cannot do for what it feels is its own security and protection. And clearly, Hamas complicates that by continuing to put out statements that there will be more October the 7th style attacks. That gives Israel more reason to say we have to defend and we have to stamp out Hamas. They're clearly out to the end to make sure that they wipe Israel off the map. Meanwhile, you've got the hostage situation. Now we're not even certain how many hostages are alive or how many of them are in the control of Hamas and how many may be held by other groups inside of Gaza. So it's all getting more complicated, not less. It's a little more muddy than it is clear. But the thing that is clear in my mind is that we have to get to a different kind of conversation in terms of what the go-forward strategy is. How do you balance those things in terms of protection and national security? How do you make sure that innocent civilians are not being targeted and that they are getting the aid and the help that they need? And that's going to require leadership that we haven't seen on the world stage from any country, including the United States, in quite a while. All right, we'll step aside for some bottom of the hour news. We'll come back. More Inside Sources coming up next.